Einstein mechanism in massive gravity. Some people still believe that basically it's the same as it works in the same way as in generic Galilean theories, and conclude the things that are not there. So I would like to clarify certain things around it. So in particular, I would like to discuss superluminalities on the Weinstein solutions. So in the decoupling limit, corresponds to the limit when mass of the graviton goes to zero and M Planck goes to infinity, and we keep a cutoff scale, which is defined as M square M Planck, and third from here fixed. In this limit, the scalar tensor part of the theory is described by the following schematic Lagrangian. So it's a two-parameter family. So there are two free parameters, alpha and beta, and lambda is this is the cutoff scale. So pi describes the helicity zero mode, and h is the helicity two mode of the graviton. There is a parameter subspace which corresponds to beta equals to zero, and I will consider that parameter subspace because this is the subspace in which this theory reduces to a very specific Galilean theory, basically. Another reason why I would like to consider this, because it's been shown by me, Gregory, Andrew, and some other people, that when beta is not equal to zero, you don't get solar system solutions that are stable. So basically, beta equals to zero, at least if you trust the decoupling limit discussion, is forced upon us. In this limit, the theory can be simplified. Namely, you can diagonalize H and pi. You can make an invertible field definition. Such that basically decouples H from pi, and the Lagrangian for pi reduces to the following. So we have a cubic Galilean term, we have a quartic Galilean term, which schematically looks like this. There is a pi t coupling. Pi couples to the trace of the stress energy tensor with the gravitational strength, and there is a disformal coupling. So this is the decoupling limit of massy gravity. So it describes the helicity zero mode of massy gravity. So this was the original. So if you take the decoupling limit, you get this. And then I set this term to zero, and I make Fielder definition, which is h goes to h plus the conformal part, eta times pi, and then there is also this part, which basically decouples h from pi, basically. But then I know how this new h is related to the old h, so the moment I know what's the configuration for pi, I can compute the configuration for the metric as well. So the moment we see this, we would conclude that this is a Galilean model, right? So, and it should have the same superluminal pathologies on spherically symmetric solutions as one has in case of generic Galileans. So what we have in generic Galileans is the following situation. So one, we consider a point-like source, which in some approximation represents like a sun, and we are trying to figure out what's the background created by sun. So we consider point-like source and try to solve pi as a function of r around point-like source. Basically, we are taking t. T is just t00 is just mass times delta function. So what we find is that at very large distances, and of course we consider the simplest asymptotic background, which is Minkowski space. So we take empty space, we put point-like source in this empty space, and try to figure out what's the configuration created by this source. What we find is that at very large distances, right? So pi is small, so that all these nonlinearities, if you go at large enough distances, can be ignored, and the only relevant part is the quadratic action for pi and this linear coupling to the stress tensor. So as a result, you find that at large distances, you will have 1/r configuration, basically. We just solved the Poisson equation. So it behaves as 1/r. But as you see, once you start approaching the source, you see that so pi is growing as r decreases. So at some point, you expect these nonlinearities to become important. And this happens around the so-called Weinstein scale. So r star, which is equal to, so it depends on the mass of the source. So at distance r star, then nonlinearities become important. And if you go even farther inside, then the nonlinearity should be even more important. So you could try to solve this equation, this generic Galilean equation, in the regime when nonlinearities are extremely important. In other words, you can try to drop all the terms except the most nonlinear one, the quartic one. So as a result, you find that, so if system enters that regime at short distances, then you find that the configuration at small distances is actually screened. So it's in the case of the quartic Galilean, it's a linear solution. So pi is a linear function of r. Okay. So you have two different regimes. At large distances, you would have this 1/r additional force. At short distances, this pi is screened. Oh, yeah, this one?
Yeah.
So actually, since now, right now I'm considering, yeah, that's a good point. Right now I'm considering only, so a pressureless source. So this won't contribute to the equation of motion if pi is static. Because this term looks as dij, yeah, right? So this term on the level of the background for pressureless sources, it doesn't contribute. But right now, actually, I was just talking about generic Galileans, basically about your results from your paper. So then as it was found by Nicolis, Ratazzi, and Trincherini a long time ago, so they basically found that the moment you have matching between these solutions, the moment you can interpolate between this screen solution at short distances and the asymptotically decayed solution. So basically, the moment you are allowed to have localized sources on asymptotically flat or de Sitter spaces, you find that perturbations propagate with superluminal velocity. So it's by definition that outside of R star, you always have small superluminality, no matter what are the parameters, as long as parameters are chosen in such a way that you have a matching between these two regimes. And you also have superluminality inside the Weinstein regime, but the amount of superluminality depends on the theory. For cubic Galilean, you have order one superluminality. For quartic, you have small superluminality, but still superluminality. So usually when somebody who knows these results, this directly concludes that there should be something similarly wrong with this theory, okay? So I would like to try, show you what are the differences. So differences, as you can see, is that, so first of all, we have this formal coupling, right? But you could say, but well, I could add it like to Galilean theory as well, right? But there is an important difference is that the coefficient of all these terms, it's controlled by the same parameter. So you don't have as much freedom here as in Galilean theories. And in particular, so for instance, okay, so let's take this theory and try to solve the same problem that we solved right there. Let's consider point-like source with asymptotically flat boundary conditions. So as we said, this term is irrelevant. So I would conclude that this is the solution, okay? But the constraint will be that alpha must be less than zero. Okay, so as long as alpha is less than zero, and this constraint has been worked out by many other people beforehand. So there are some constraints that you need to satisfy for coefficients, but as long as alpha is less than zero, you have this screen solution, which is superluminal. So you would say that, okay, that's a problem, right? So if alpha is less than zero, then you have matching between a screen solution and asymptotically decaying solution. If it's greater than zero, I'll talk about that, then the screen solution is matched on the cosmological solution, basically. So for alpha greater than zero, you cannot put localized source on the Mikoski space. And you basically, even if you start with some very dilute cloud, which is like in a linear regime, and try to collapse it, there is some obstruction to collapse it. So I'll discuss it. So for alpha less than zero, you would conclude that, okay, so massive gravity has exactly the same problems as generic Galileans. However, we need to realize that these are not physical sources, right? So every single source, especially if decoupling limit is applicable, it should be finite size source, right? Because so first of all, you cannot cross the Schwarzschild radius, for instance, because in the decoupling limit it goes to zero. So we cannot really go all the way to zero distances in the decoupling limit, especially. I mean, we cannot do it in any theory of gravity, I guess, but especially in the decoupling limit. So the physical problem that we need to consider is the source of a finite size. Okay, so let's try to ask the question, what will change if instead of point-like source, I would consider some sphere of uniform energy density. Okay. So then we will notice that this term, although it is negligible for the background, because the source doesn't have pressure, but it becomes important for the perturbations. In particular, if I were, like, let's say I found pi equals to some pi classical, and I perturbed it, then and to study superluminality or stability of the theory, I have to expand my action in the quadratic order in delta pi. So I'll have contributions coming from all these three terms. So the most dominant one, if I'm deep, for instance, deep in the Weinstein regime, that's basically where our source is located, then this will be the dominant source. So I will have, so quadratic action for delta pi will have a contribution that will look like d delta pi square times basically d pi classical over lambda cube square. But it also has another contribution which comes from this term. And it looks like simply alpha times energy density over, so lambda cube times M Planck is just a critical density, basically, but it's just on this. And we have delta pi dot square. Yeah, but I was assuming I'm deep in the Weinstein region, so that's the dominant contribution. So and now next point we should make is that, so what does this look like in the deep in the Weinstein regime? Okay, for quartic Galilean, I'll just spare you details. So dd pi classical over lambda cube, it goes as r star over r. So this term is humongous. The coefficient is equal to r star over r, where r star is usually like greater than solar system scale, so it's pretty big, and r is the small distance, much smaller than r star because we are at short distances. Now let's say, so first of all, so this term is there only inside source, so it's absent outside the source. So let's try to go inside the source and see what happens there. So inside the source, the background undergoes trivial change. Basically, r becomes capital R. So the whole thing will be squared, the whole coefficient. So now if we look at this, we see that density, right? So density is obviously simply m over r cubed, right? So simple estimate. So what you see is that, so this guy scales as 1 over r squared, this guy scales as 1 over r cubed, and even if you work out the coefficients, what you find is that this coefficient here is of order of, this coefficient here is of order of r star over r cube. Okay? So what we find is that what determines whether your perturbations are healthy or not inside sources, it's this term, not the Galilean term. And it turns out that unless you choose, if you choose alpha to be negative, then the kinetic term will be ghost-like. So basically, you cannot trust that background. So what this means is that if you, let's say, if you start from very dilute sources, you start collapsing, then at some point, once this become order of one, so it happens at the critical density, once you start crossing the critical density barrier, you basically, your fluctuation, the kinetic terms for your fluctuations will first disappear, which means that it's strongly coupled, which already means that it's out of your control, you cannot compute anything, but if you keep going, then basically it becomes ghost-like. So these backgrounds are not there. Okay. So the conclusion is that, for first of all, so alpha equals to alpha negative is inadmissible. Okay, now let's say what happens for alpha positive. For alpha positive, this term is positive, and there is no issue with the ghosts inside the source. So let's choose alpha positive and try to solve the alpha positive and try to solve the same Weinstein background for this system. What you find is that, so of course you have a solution. You could simply solve at the very large distances, just make this linearize theory and solve for your background. You will find that you have 1/r solution. And at the short distances, you will have Weinstein solution. But what happens is that for alpha greater than the zero, these two solutions never meet each other. So what happens is that once you start following the solution to shorter and shorter distances, the moment you reach R star, the solution becomes imaginary. So basically, you cannot continue solution beyond the Weinstein radius. This is similar to if you would consider a DBI coupled to the trace of the stress energy tensor. So there is the same thing. You don't have Weinstein solution on with the flat boundary conditions. There is actually because so pi oh, let me think about it.
These are like string like solutions.
No, actual DBI.
Correct
sign DBI. In correct sign DBI, you have singularity at finite distance. I can tell you what is the singularity in. It's in pi prime.
Yeah, but it's still, it's like, it just means pi is becoming multi-valued. The actual solution looks like some throat.
Yeah, I'm just discussing real, maybe there is some underlying, depends on what construction you are considering. If it's just single scalar field, simple scalar field. Oh yeah, that I don't know. I was just simply going. Yeah. Yeah, maybe that. Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know about that. But if you just consider scalar field, which has the action of DBI and coupled to trace of energy momentum tensor, what you find is that solution for pi prime, it looks something like, so you have here some 1/ r square, or I don't remember the power, and you have square root 1 minus 1/ r to the 4 kind of behavior or something. So there is some R star here before. Yeah, so at finite distances,
it is pi
choice
of variables.
Yeah, you have to, But with the, if it's so just four dimensional scalar field, then just cancel. Okay, let me. You know, here physical quantities do blow up, so let me go ahead. So actually, yeah, okay, to check whether physical quantities blow up or not, we can simply try to evaluate dense energy density and pressure on that solution. What you find is that actually when you hit this point, both pressure and energy density blow up. They are both positive and they both blow up. So which means that you at least, once you start to approach this point, at least the effective description breaks down because you cannot trust your effective theory at infinite energy densities. So this solution, it's we need to throw it away because you cannot continue. There is no way we can continue beyond this point. So this screen solution, on the other hand, instead of matching to the decaying solution, it matches to the growing solution. Okay, so now you could say, okay, what does it mean? I introduced some localized source, and then now suddenly I have configuration that is growing, right? But actually, in reality, it doesn't mean anything terrible because if you check the asymptotic behavior, so in limit r goes to infinity of pi, it basically reduces to it's of order of modulo coefficient lambda cube r square, basically. So it's like basically another, so as you see, it's independent of the mass of the source. So this is basically just another vacuum solution of the theory. So what we saw here is that so in this parameter space, basically you cannot put sources on a flat space because once you try to collapse some clouds to form stars, you will reach some strong coupling point. So basically it's out of your control. You cannot say whether you form these dense sources or not. But if you were to start from this cosmological background, then there is no problem. So you have this Earth or Sun located on the cosmological solution, which which exhibits Weinstein mechanism perfectly, so everything is fine. The problem is that if you check equation of state for this, so it's not nice. So actually, W is roughly minus 0.1. So what this tells you is that this cannot be the dominant contribution to the cosmological and energy density. So basically, you need some other ingredient to explain all this accelerated expansion. So you can show that you cannot find stable asymptotically De Sitter solutions either. So basically, yeah, that's the problem. But the point is that it is possible to have localized sources on this.
Because, yeah. Why is it not really asymptotically De Sitter? Because, I mean, you think this is the vacuum solution to the theory?
Yes. So the theory, since it's nonlinear, it has multiple vacua. It has flat vacuum. It has De Sitter vacua. It also has something that has completely different equation of state. This is not flat. So if you were to compute an effective stress tensor, so it will have this equation of state.
But that means you have a preferred friend,
So it's not minus one in some sense. So equation of state is not minus one. You could find solutions like that. So you could take a pi to be lambda cube x mu square, for instance. And then that would give you effectively equation of state minus one. And your metric would be just De Sitter metric in local Fermi coordinates.
If W is minus 0.5, then there's time evolution. But
first of all, we are not probing the horizon scales here because it's out of the reach of the effective theory. But this is a fluid that will drive the time evolution. So it depends in what coordinates you write, because you can take FRW coordinates, like, I don't know, matter-dominated universe, and write it in a static coordinates. So it's not no problem with that. The point is that there is no way to avoid seeing time evolution once you capture horizon effects as well. But once you are in coordinates which covers horizon as well. But this coordinates, this decoupling limit itself fails around horizons. So, but in reality, there is a time evolution. So it's an actual cosmology. At least locally, that's how it looks. We don't know how it will look at farther, at larger distances. But at least locally, like at distances smaller than the horizon, effectively, we see that there will be some cosmological time evolution.
I don't see how a solution like that.
Okay, but.
No, I understand. Yeah. I'm saying that if you have a conserved theory and T naught dot is not the same as Pij, and it behaves like R squared, then it would have explicit time dependence in it.
It does. When you lost, when you turn everything
fine. Yeah, but now, yeah.
Has nothing to do with M1. This is just conservation. And it's momentum conservation. Tells you that.
You won't have gravity.
No, it has
energy
has nothing to do with gravity. Yeah, so T naught naught and Tij are constant for this guy. Because effective energy momentum tensor, if I would write, it will always involve two derivatives of pi. So effective T is constant. T calculated out of this guy is constant. But there will be time evolution because it will drive some cosmology. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So and what is surprising is that.
So that in your new is the variation with respect to the original metric or to the new metric? Because with respect to the new metric, it's not the form of the new metric, it also has first derivatives.
No. What I meant is following. This pi is the old pi, right? So this pi is, I didn't change pi,
yeah.
Right, in the filter definition. So now to check the actual metric, I just go back and look at Einstein's equations. Einstein's equation for actual metric, it looks like this. Dd pi. Huh? Yeah, exactly. So that's T mu nu. So let's go back.
Yes,
exactly. Yes. Absolutely.
Can I ask another question? So you said something about the Sitter solution. You're saying there's no, what's the claim? With the Sitter asymptotics, there's no.
So I don't remember in which parameter space was how, but the conclusion is that there are, so I think in this case, you either do not have the Sitter solutions or they are unstable.
Yeah.
They are ghost-like.
They are unstable. They are.
Yeah.
Whereas this solution you're saying is stable and subluminal.
So now, yeah, I was gonna say, yeah. So it turns out that it is subluminal. So first thing you will check is the speed of sound on this background, on the cosmological background. And we find that CS is less than one, and it's less than one by order of one. It's actually, so it's, it has some square root from three, and so it's a complicated number, but it's significantly smaller than one. So it could be of order of one half, for instance. So now, that already tells you that now if you start check the sound speed at distances larger than this R star, so you'll be fine, because the small correction, when if nonlinearities are small corrections to your background, then they cannot change your luminality, so the subluminality. When you enter inside the Weierstein region and compute the perturbations, then you find the following.
So that's one for both radial.
That's right. Yeah, actually, for outside here, it's actually invariant. It's rotationally invariant because it's R square, so it's basically xj square. So it's always yeah. So now let's perturb this background and compute the perturbations deep inside Weinstein region. So what we find is that so pi delta pi dot square has the coefficient that looks like R star over R square plus, actually I can even write the coefficients right. So alpha to the 2/3 here, sorry. So delta pi dot square has alpha to the 2/3 R star over R square plus alpha to the 1/3 R star over R. So this is the coefficient of this. So then we have dr delta pi square, which has coefficient equal to simply this guy. Over r square. And I won't write angular because actually in all Galilean theories you can show that angulars are always subluminal and too subluminal. So let's don't bother in writing. So there is no problem with there is no consistency problem with the angular perturbations perturbations in angular direction because they are always subluminal. So in this case, so we see that so. In the leading order, in R star over R, which is a very large number, so if I ignore this, the speed of sound, it should be minus here. So it is 1, basically, because it has exactly the same coefficient. There is no order of 1 superluminality. Now, we have to check the corrections, of course. So if you check if you compute the correction, what you get is that you get additional contribution to the delta pi dot square, without getting any contribution to the radial gradient term, so which tells you that your background is slightly subluminal, basically. So and then but remember that this is for alpha greater than zero. If I were to consider alpha less than zero, right, which is usually what people consider for Galileans, right, because so. For alpha less than zero, so alpha less than zero is the case for which you have asymptotically flat solutions. So that's what we are interested in for Galileans usually. So if alpha would be less than zero, it would be superluminal. So usually these backgrounds were dismissed because so we had luxury to choose among maximally symmetric backgrounds, and we tried to make sense of the theory around those backgrounds. But here we don't. So we need to go and see what is available. And what we see is that at least if you constrain yourself to the spherically symmetric solutions, the backgrounds that we checked are subluminal. So then you could ask that, okay, so can there be other cosmologies? So can I have other cosmologies that I can put my source on?
You can ask, one thing, I'm worried about this form of coupling. So if I couple this to some fluid, either positive pressure or negative pressure.
Oh yeah, that's that, okay. Yeah, that's right. So if you introduce a source, naively you would think that for positive pressure, so you would get, right, so if pi dot square has correct sign, then the gradient term will have wrong sign. But the way it turns out is that, so first of all, in order to explore that instability, in order to have that instability, pressure should be greater than something, basically, right? So there will be some critical. So if pressure is below that, it's fine. But actually, if you consider sources like Earth, then you cannot ignore this anymore, so you have to take into account. But what happens is that once you consider pressures so high that this starts to contribute to the perturbations, it also contributes to the background. Because you see, so we were able to drop this term when we were finding background only because there was no pressure. The moment I have pressure, like pressure in the, even like in the atmosphere, then actually I'm not sure about atmosphere, in the Earth. If you take the whatever pressure we have in the Earth, then this term will contribute to the background. And what you find is that the gradient term will have a coefficient right here. So what the term is, the sign of the gradient term is following. So it's minus, and you have rho rho minus 2p, I think, and you get here dj pi squared, delta pi squared. So minus is the correct sign for the gradients, right? So you see that, so you will find that, and it's normalized on a rho. So you find that, so pressure needs to be comparable to rho. But in this regime, you cannot possibly trust the decoupling. It's like a neutron star, for instance. So there, I mean, but that's a good point. So in principle, pressure could destabilize it. And when you study De Sitter space in a parameter space that I completely ignored, which corresponded to beta equals to non-zero, actually that's the problem of De Sitter space. That those effects that you just mentioned destabilize, the space. Okay, so I'll what we found is this sublimit. So I would like to finish by making one analogy, one comment, which. Somebody may find encouraging, some may not. So there is sometimes arguments are given that there can be a relation between having Weinstein screening and having UV completion. Because, for instance, if we consider the Goldstone theory that Gregory considered, so let's consider that guy and couple it to, so let's write delta L to that guy, which is chi t. What you find is that for C negative, you have Weinstein-like solution. So you basically have something like this solution, which is of course superluminal as people have been discussing it. So because C negative gives rise to superluminality, and this particular solution is also superluminal. So it's a bad choice. So you have Weinstein solution. So now we could ask the question, what would happen if I flip the sign of the C? What happens that in that case is that there is basically story repeats itself. So it's basically the same, almost the same story as in the massive gravity case. In that case, there is no matching between screen solution and asymptotically decaying solution anymore. So instead, what happens is that what was the screen solution, it matches to the growing solution, which has pi equals to at large distances. Equals to lambda square r, basically. So you have, so for the correct choice of sign for which we know what is UV completion, you actually have a screen solution on something like cosmological background, basically.
Is it r squared or r?
R. So in this case, it's r because it's one derivative per field. Now I was talking about the Goldstone theory. So it's one r. So d pi is constant, basically. Dr pi is constant. It's just lambda square. Yeah, so I tried that. I could not find this solution there. Because actually, this solution has pathology. So it's a solution as a solution. So it's a background solution. But if you study perturbations, it has ghosts at short distances. So it's not good. So and having ghosts that signals you that in a UV complete theory, something should happen to this background. So it should not be there. But I think it's an interesting observation that so you have choices of sign for which you have choice of sign that has Weinstein solution, you cannot UV complete, and the other choice of sign for which you don't have Weinstein solution and you have instead some cosmological like behavior at large distances, you know how to UV complete your theory. And then take massive gravity theory for which you have sign choices for which, basically we are forced phenomenologically to consider signs parameters for which we don't have Weinstein solution in the conventional sense, but we have these asymptotically cosmological solutions. No, I know.
And then the sharp condition is like positivity of the amplitude.
That's right. Yeah. No, I understand.
In the same sort.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, in fact, yeah.
I should go on that Lorentz violating background, cosmological one, right? So the spectral decomposition that we should write in this is would be in omega, not in the Mandelbrot. So because of that,
if you think that Minkowski Wacker was a good background for this.
No, I'm not talking about Minkowski Wacker, I'm talking about the cosmological one.
So he wants to quantize it on this cosmological branch,
right.
The theory.
So then the spectral argument should be done in that context, not in terms of the Mandelbrot level. And if you look at it's interesting that the fact that your differential relations change on cosmological background, and on that background give you omega squared behavior. As opposed to in the Lorentz-Noetic case in which you don't have S squared. Now, I don't know if that already helps you, but that's something to be.
I don't see why I need to go in the background. There has pi equals zero background.
What I'm saying is that, or rather, hypothesizing is that if there is a UV completion, it might be so that if you only have that Lorentz violating background, and not the Minkowski background, in which case it would be a more consistent picture.
That's why we have to go to get around all this problem to say that through this theory doesn't allow one to learn background. Get around many problems with supernumeral, so close standard curve construction,
It doesn't have to be explicit more in the context.
Yeah, sure.
I want to again object to what you call cosmological, because it seems that if you just put this fluid with W of minus 0.1 in a FRW, then it says that its density should decay with time because of continuity equation. And but then that its density seems to be fixed by lambda cube, the density of the.
Why should it decay?
It just a continuity equation is rho dot is minus 3h. Rho 1 plus W. So continuity equation tells you that any W which is not minus 1 should decay with any fluid for which W is not minus 1 should decay with time as the universe expands. But
okay.
It seems like
okay. So it decays,
a constant density. So
it depends if you turn on gravity or not.
Yeah.
Cosmology
has gravity.
But there will be some curve.
So my question is there a consistent cosmological background that could matches, and I think this would be the problem, that this has a constant density that doesn't change with time, but anything which that has
it's only constant.
Yeah.
So what is the density? It's lambda to some power.
Yeah, lambda cube. It's critical density.
It's a fundamental constant of the theory.
Yeah.
The effects that you are talking about are the same orders, which is 1, 1, 1, as the...
No, I understand it's the same order,
but the question sure exists, whether
that's
the solution. And by the way, I can comment that the same Piaget is presented for us, and if any publisher we found exactly the solution, this for a kind of cubic Galilean. And they really have seen that exactly what Basha was saying, that if you, basically, you cannot match it to the static part, but you can match it to the cosmology, time-dependent background, but it's kind of very slow accretion.
Right, okay, so that would be the way.
Yes.
So it wouldn't be on the so the only way around is if you have constant accretion into your central object.
Yeah, so something will be happening on time scales of order of Hubble.
Right. So that means that over a cosmological time scale, then your central object is like accreting.
Yeah, something. So there's some slow,
What is the, if it is the mess, which is hidden in this cloud of pi.
Uh-huh.
So is it wrong that this actually
mass of the pi?
Because you have basically the source, a star, and then there is this profile of pi. So what is the total mass of this profile? Because because it's going to be like a blob, a big blob. So what is the method?
No, but so anyway, you can compute at very large distances. So at very large distances is like additional, so like gives you 1 over r force. So I don't know if you could infer that it's basically of order of the mass of the source. Yeah, something like, because yeah, effectively at large distance, right? So you see gravitational force and additional fifth force.
Yeah.
So you could say that, yeah, it's effectively doubles the mass.
Yeah.
And this minimization depends probably on the size. It's either positive or negative.
That was true for Mikhail's specific. Yeah, one was positive or negative. Here, I think it was positive.
But as you start approaching, okay.